It is time to rally the troops. Because it's time once again for year two of the No Spin Rodeo Rally, live on the Cinch Jeans and Shirt stage with Tommy Joe Lucia and Kendra Santos.
Welcome, everybody, to the No Spin Rodeo Rally right here live in Las Vegas. We're at the Convention Center at the Cowboy Commons. Now, by the way, if you're coming to the Convention Center, you might want to try that entrance. It's a whole lot easier to get in on that side. New way in, lots to see over here. But welcome. It's Thursday the 4th. That means we're kicking off the NFR. Welcome to our team, Kendra Santos, and joining us, Dr. Doug Corey. Hello, guys.
Good morning. Are we good on the mic? Cool?
Okay. I got you.
Morning, Doug.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm peachy.
Especially after a big night last night.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that has to be the first thing, right? The grand finale of last night's PRC Awards banquet was the Tommy Joe Lucia, after little brother gets two-time announcer of the year, the Danita Barnes Lifetime Achievement Award is capped the evening. So cool. Congratulations.
Outstanding.
Thank you. Yeah, it, like I said last night, that's the award I would want, right? It was great, great company, so blessed. And just a hug, well, you know, we say this all the time. We are a rodeo family. Like, it's real. We're not kidding. And just to hug everybody and the tears and the memories of Dad and then Anthony there and winning. And I'm a blessed human. It's a great day.
Lifetime achievement is fitting.
Doesn't that mean that it's done? I mean, like, I thought that, is that their way of saying, okay, you're done, Lucia, get out of here. We're I'm not quite that old. I'm pretty old.
Your whole family went away last night pretty happy.
They did. It was a good night for the old Lucia legacy. Well, we thank you guys for coming. We want to encourage everybody to come out every morning at 9:30 and join us here live. We have nobody. No, we have a few. But join us live here, and we're going to start the show with our Pro Fantasy Rodeo round recap. Now, that will be daily when we have rounds to recap, but I'm going to lean on Kendra, okay, to help us with this. Now, let me talk a little bit about Pro Fantasy Rodeo before we kick into this. If you haven't got it, if you're a fantasy person and you do fantasy football and stuff like that, you know, you understand it, and if you play Fantasy Rodeo, Pro Fantasy Rodeo, you know how it works. If you haven't, try it. But right now is the time to get your big team. You pick your Cowboys based on a salary cap. You can only pick so many Cowboys, which I hate because you can't pick all the winners. And you get lucky if you pick a loser that wins. Those of you that have been there and done that. This is your time to pick your big team. And then from here on out, you can play daily, which is really fun, and we'll talk about that. But it's profantasyrodeo.com. Casey Jones and the team there, they do a great job, give away a lot of great gifts. And so our sponsored element is our round recap. So what I'm going to do is set it up like that, and then I'm going to throw it over to Kendra, who's going to get us kind of answer some questions going into the NFR to get us prepped.
Well, I went to my go-to. The Sunny Deb Backstrom has been the secretary of the NFR, maybe as long as Doug Corey's been the go-to veterinarian in professional rodeo.
I mean, this is when they were marking out dinosaurs.
You know, yeah. So I think what's interesting going into tonight, because I always get 1,000 questions about competition order. And so here it is, because it's different. It changes over the years and it's different from event to event. So tonight, the general concept is 15th to first. Competition order. But so in the bulldogging, the team roping, and the calf roping, okay, we're going to go 15 down to one tonight, and then we're going to drop two every night.
Drop two?
Yes.
That's not normal, right? I don't think so.
I don't know how normal this. This is what I got from Sunny Deb. So the rough stock is really interesting, which we've talked a little bit about previous shows, but the top five current day-to-day leaders in the world standings go last every single night, which is a pretty big deal. So 15 to 1 now, and at the last five guys will be 5-4-3-2-1 based on world standings money.
Every night?
Every night. So Sometimes the order is tweaked. Poor Tom Newens, the ref stock boss. The tweak of the orders in the ref stock can happen with stock contractors and preferences on left or right-hand delivery. Some of that, like they do their best to accommodate, hey, a horse prefers a left-hand delivery or whatever. But the fact that the top five guys in the world go last every single night, that's pretty big. So,
but for our non-diehards, let's go back, take a quick step back, drop two. What you mean is...
So in those three events, the first night, if you're 15th, you're going first.
Right.
The second night, if you're 13th coming into the finals, you're going second. The third night, if you're 11th, okay?
Got it.
And then, okay, but then the barrel race changed 2 years ago, the order. So it used to be the same as the team roping, calf roping, and bulldogging. But now, in the first round, the world leader goes first. So it goes first down to 15th, which is opposite of those other timed events. Okay. So the world leader, Cassie Mowry, is going to go first tonight. So the girls did change that. And this is always a vote of the
contestants. And that's top of the ground thing, right?
It's top of the ground, you know, first. So, and then they're going to drop two every round, including round 10. Whereas the other events, then they go world standings order in round 10. Barrel racers are just going to drop two at all 10 rounds. Okay. And then also interesting to a nerd like me who loves every detail is that the team roping, in case you're wondering, well, how do they order the teams, you know, to start with? And it's not based on combined earnings or anything like that. It's based on whichever partner has more money won. That's the order that they're going to go. So do you see what I'm saying? Like if the header's seventh and the heeler came in 15th, they're going to be ordered where the header is based on money won of all team ropers.
That is confusing.
So it's very confusing. And
no idea what you just said, but whatever.
Well, it's
that somebody understands this,
I don't.
Okay. Let me try again. If it's not, you're like, well, if you're going to do 15 down to first, it's easy in the bulldogging and the calf roping, but who are you going to base it on? You've got 30 guys in the team roping.
Why wouldn't you just combine their money? That seems simple.
They don't.
Well, I know they don't. I'm just saying.
So whichever guy came in higher, that's how they're going to go in the order.
All right, I'm just going to go with who they call out.
Okay. So, but a big plot twist here in the bulldogging and the calf roping is that there are three horses that I know of. In three horses that I know of in the steer wrestling alone that have three guys on them. So then we have splits. And they did some special splits this year. Like, okay, in the calf roping, I'm just going to jump to there. Peso, the buckskin of Logan Bird, very famous, you know, little short score horse. Ty and Joel Harris and Kyle Lucas are riding him. They got a special approval to split them by three. So that goes back to the headaches of the secretary, you know, and to do that. In the steer wrestling, Swamper, Banker, and Crush, three horses, are going to be transporting nine guys.
Really?
So do you know, this is like a logistical test for a secretary, which is why they have the ever calm Sunny Deb, who has literally seen it all. So Swamper has Wag, Will, and Dakota. Banker has Schaefer, Tucker Allen, and Jesse Brown. And Crush has his owner, Ty Erickson, Rowdy Parrott, and Stetson Jorgensen, which Mabel couldn't come this year. You know, she's been a mainstay here, and she's not here. So splits are going to be a big, fat twist. When I'm just telling you my messenger and my text message, why did these guys go last night? This is all the little reasons why.
Well, and... when you talked about lefts and rights a little bit for our non-rodeo people, the way that these rough stock animals exit the chute affects how they buck. And so a left-hand delivery animal will turn out to their left, and there's some that turn out to the right. Why then would it be such a big deal? Why could that be so complicated? Well, because remember, the NFR is timed down to the second. And if you have three left-hand deliveries, right, and the stock contractor wants his horse in the back chute, you would have to roll the guy in, let the guy get on before he could nod his head. So what do? they mix it up a little bit so they can go over and get a right-hand delivery, say shoot number four, and then jump back over. And it's all about production and pace of game. And so I think that's cool. Now I have a quick question that just came out of the blue for me. Two, because you're with Oat, you should be able to answer this. Maybe both of you can. How much is too much to run on a bulldog and horse? I mean, is a horse better the first run? So these horses are running three runs. Is that a lot? Or is that not much for them? I don't know.
It's horse to horse. Oat came out of the steer wrestling capital of the world under the Duval's tutelage, and they never turned anybody down. I mean, Roy Duval let Oat Berry ride his horse of the year when Oat was in high school, doing the Nesty Challenge at the NFR in Oklahoma City, right? Like, and told him, hey, you can get back on and double jump him if you want. And that was the horse of the year at the NFR, right? So everybody's different as far as owners, but also every horse is different. And every once in a while, you know, there are some horses like a Crush that is solid as a rock and start to finish. If 10 of them rode him, I swear that horse would just do it. He's locked in, you know. But every once in a while, a hazing horse or a bulldogging horse here, it really is like the cowboys describe it. It's like nowhere else where it does feel like 17,000 people are on top of you, and the horses feel that too. And so if somebody kind of spins out, I mean, we had a major horse change right in the middle of it last year.
Yeah.
Because you can't jack around. Also, if you jack around too much in the box, first you get fined and you can potentially get turned out. Cause you can't hold up the show.
That's never happened.
It's come really close, and I've been a participant in how hard it is for people watching. But so how many? I mean, these three horses have lit it up all year long, you know, and they in all conditions. But here, and I can't wait to find out. Now the burning question for me is, why is Dakota Eldridge wearing a walking boot? Like, I heard he dropped a panel on his foot, but I want to know more about that.
When he went down the runway, I saw that because I was really concerned about the steps at the end during the back number.
Oat almost face planted.
I saw. Oat almost took a header.
Watching who are going, why is Kendra wearing a double X jacket? It's because you mentioned Oat.
Did he get that for coming?
This is tonight is throwback night.
But is that an original?
This is a very, very old NFR jacket, and so that's why I'm wearing a 2X today, and the 1985 champs are opening the show tonight to celebrate 40 years here in Vegas.
So back on the steer wrestling horses, and you probably know the answer, but every horse is different, but what do you think of some of these arenas that are a little smaller, such as the NFR arenas, small compared to, say, Cheyenne or Pendleton?
Well, it's huge. Because the start here is so vital, and the start is almost nothing. Like, it's almost like you have to take the chance that the steer is going to start. Every once in a blue moon, they don't. But if you are late here, the buck and shoots come really fast. Just ask Rod Lyman, right? And so what you're asking for here is so special, especially in the bulldog and especially in the team roping. You know, the team roping, we got to deal with this left wall. And so in the steer wrestling here, it's like you cannot be late because the back end comes too fast. So you got to take that start. You got to ask for them to give you a flat start. You've got to ask for them to let you, if the opportunity presents itself, here's your shot right here in front, you know, and to put you in the right spot. And then they're supposed to go from 0 to 90 right out of the blocks, and then somehow get stopped before the back end, which comes so fast here. So it is, there are some of these spectacular horses are great everywhere, but you know, I don't think that they'd be riding, say, in the calf rope, and Peso is like for Calgary, for the Thomas and Mack, you know, and probably not what you're going to take to Cheyenne or Salinas, but these horses, these bankers and swampers and crush, they're extraordinary everywhere. And to have that amount of run and still have that control is a pretty spectacular combination.
Well, that's been our Pro Fantasy Rodeo round recap before the round actually happens. So thank you, Pro Fantasy Rodeo. Go to ProFantasyRodeo.com. Since he's already spoken in our round table, we thought it was very appropriate to bring in Dr. Doug Corey to our round table here. Renowned is a fair word, which can also mean been around for 42 years. Renowned veterinarian and expert in a lot of things. Now, nobody's a complete expert in anything, but we thought it was appropriate given the top storyline, which we'll get into, of the 2025 NFR. So welcome to the show, Dr. Doug Corey.
Thank you. And first of all, I'm not an expert on.
I knew you were going to say that. I know.
There are a lot of people around the country that are a lot more qualified to talk about this than I will.
But there's a lot of experts on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure that half of them don't know what they're talking about. So that's, you're definitely an expert.
Okay.
Compared to the keyboard warriors. That's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Well, tell us a little bit about, you do some background with us. Tell us how it all started. Why are you still here 42 years? What do you love about it? Where'd you start?
You know, well, this is interesting how I got started in it. There was a bull rider, Brian McDonald, and Brian was around, and he and I judged I believe it was a Miss Rodeo Oregon and maybe a Miss Nevada, Rodeo
imagine
Nevada.
That. Yeah, imagine that.
And we did that back in the early 80s, like 80, 81. And he told me at that time, he said, there's a big issue out there facing rodeo. And he said, this is animal rights and these activists. And I said, what are you talking about? I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. And he said, it's really going to be a big issue. And Brian was very, very smart. Turns out he was right on. He said, there's going to be a meeting with, I believe it was John Growney, Doc Etienne, who was an attorney out of Salinas, Jack Roddy, Bob Ragsdale, and a couple others, and we were going to meet in Houston. And so we met in Houston in, I believe it was 81. Oh. Could have been 82, but anyway, back then we started talking about it. And at that time, Jack Roddy had, and Doc Etienne had been tracking a lot of different things that a group called ALF, Animal Liberation Front, had done. And they'd burned some buildings and things, and they were tracking this. And so we formed a committee, a PRCA Livestock Welfare Committee. It's changed names several times. And Doc was the chairman of that for quite a few years. And then I took over, 23, 24, 25 years ago as being chairman when Doc decided to slow down. Still involved. I still like it. I really enjoy it. I like rodeo. I love the Western lifestyle. And I hate to see somebody try to take it away from us.
And rich roots in the Pendleton Roundup. Fair? Yeah,
yes. Well, we're very tied. If you're from Pendleton, you're tied into the Pendleton Roundup probably. Yeah. And my family's been very involved in the Pendleton Roundup and the Happy Canyon Night Show. So, yes.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, so I'm going to let Kendra kick it off. But if you're not aware, if you've been under a rock, EHV1 has caused a nightmare for the producers and promoters of events, but especially the Super Bowl of Rodeo right here in Las Vegas, and of course the World Series of Team Roping. And correct me if I'm wrong. First, we probably ought to, what our goal is today, everybody, is to clarify the facts, the stuff that we know, because there's a lot, as we all know, you can literally read Facebook, right, Kendra? And one post says, don't go anywhere, put your horse in a Ziploc bag in the freezer for 21 days. And another post says, oh, this is just like COVID. You don't have to wear a mask. Go wherever you want. It's been around forever. So we're going to do a little bit of Mythbusters. So we're just going to open it up with you telling us what exactly is this virus? Been around forever? Can you fill us in?
EHV, well, let's start. It's a latent. It is in almost every horse. It's a latent virus, DNA virus, that's in probably 80-85% of all horses. When does it come out? There are two main ones, EHV1 and EHV4. The EHV1 is the one we're concerned about. When does it come out? And I don't think anybody really knows that answer. At least anything I know and people I've talked to, stress, maybe, transporting, which is a stress immunosuppressant, so to speak. So you get that, plus maybe the weather change. They seem to see more of it when it's moist, damp environments, cold, as opposed to a hot summer day. So maybe that's what stressed it. This time, and we've seen it. I mean, it's not as though it's brand new. No, it's been around, and you just don't see it. And when you get an outbreak like this, it's magnified, obviously, because of the number of horses that have been exposed and affected by it. So, and the EHV1 is mainly respiratory, can cause abortions also, and EHV1 can then sort of morph into EHM, which is myelencephalopathy, which means essentially the myelo means spinal cord. So it'll affect get into the brain the virus is in as viremia, gets into the bloodstream. Then it affects the vasculature, which are the blood vessels, inflames the blood vessels, heading into the brain, the blood-brain barrier, and those swell up essentially, and then they blood clots, and so a lack of blood supply to those spinal cord in the brain can cause the issues there of the neurologic symptoms.
Now, if they go to EHM, right?
Yep.
Is that a death certificate? Or can they come out of that? Is that if it goes to EHM, is it over or can they come out of that?
Well, that's good. That's a really interesting question. I think that, and I have to remember the statistics, but about 80, I believe it's about 40, about 80% of the horses that come up with EHV1, about 40% may show some form of neurologic symptoms. And then you're down to about 10 or 15% where the neurologic symptoms get really bad.
I see.
And then, so I think that's really important. This outbreak, I believe when it started in Waco, I think there are like 60 cases all around the U.S., not all of them tied to Waco. They're trying to, I think in this outbreak, there's like 44, 45 cases tied to the Waco. And there were like 1,500 horses at the Waco in the area that were exposed, not that many at the event, but that they've had to contact because of exposure. Of those, and this is where it's sort of interesting, I think, the data that I'm getting right now from this morning, that five are confirmed to having been either euthanized or died from the neurologic form. And this data is available on the Equine Disease Communication Network, EDCC. You can pull it up online.
You people listening, write this down, because you can go look this up and get current, accurate data, the same that veterinarians across the country are looking at. Is that correct?
That's right. And if you can't get on, get your veterinarian on it. And it's put up by the American Association of Equine Practitioners. It has been a great tool. It's pretty accurate. I mean, they try to keep it up daily. So it's the numbers are there.
Of confirmed cases, because a lot of confirmed reported cases, right?
Deaths.
Well, I think you've hit on another really good point, Kendra. We don't know how many cases there are out there that may have gone home.
and somebody didn't report it, because it is a reportable disease. If your veterinarian sees it, he needs to report it to the state that you're in. And obviously,
but there's going to be a bunch of them that don't want to do that because their place is quarantined, right?
Possible.
This is the world's nicest guy. I'm telling you, there's some people out there that would prefer to not report it because then they're quarantined.
Yeah. So back to your other question about can you treat the neurologic form? There are some thoughts depending on how early you catch it. The symptoms are obviously, maybe ataxic in the hind end. Maybe they dribble urine. They might sort of dog sit, the back end sits. They might shuffle their feet in a stall, and you might notice the shavings as they're dragging their feet, and be just sort of wobbly, as they're walking. So if you happen to catch it early on, there are anti-inflammatories, non-steroidals like butazolidone, Banamine. And there are some new things coming out, like these antiviral drugs, valcyclovir, similar to acyclovir that maybe people take. So some of those things really work if you catch them early. One of the things, if a horse is going to be down, is to get them to a facility, where they can actually put them in a sling.
Yeah, I've seen them. I was going to ask you. They've got them hanging.
Because I think you want them in a sling where obviously they can breathe better, and then also good supportive therapy, IV fluids. Some of them put them on antibiotics, even though that doesn't help the virus, but it may help keep them from getting pneumonia or other problems that develop with being with a horse that's down. A horse that's down is not good, and so there are treatments, but. Some of them may have long, if they don't progress, some of them may have long lasting things, and they end up getting to the point where you may end up needing to turn them out for a few months and see what happens before you know that answer.
Gotcha.
There have been a couple of that have played out online very publicly, cases where one of them is the great Hello Stella, mare, and now she's gone home, and it appears that it's been maybe they caught things early. She clearly had the best of care. And then another case has been, when we speak of Waco, they're talking about the women's rodeo finals for people who don't understand. And there's been a very publicly played out case of a team roping horse by the name of Watermelon. And one thing that I think is a reality is some of these horses we're seeing people who the horse is down. You can tell the horse is very, very sick, miserable, but they are, getting them up with slings and tractors and doing the best they can at home, because the fact of the matter is not everyone has the money that it would take to go the distance at a highest end facility. And so, I don't know, my veterinarian dad used to always say to me, people need to make some of these decisions, for example, about colic, when everything's fine. And you need to decide it horse by horse. If this horse colics, am I taking him and going to put him on the table or not, so that it's not an emotional decision? And I feel like this kind of came out of nowhere. But I mean, and I have seen, I saw something that was sent to me, and I hope it's okay to just share it, but one of the people I'm talking about, the owner of Watermelon, shared with me that Trisha Aldridge, that has the 5-year-old stud Adios Pantalones here at their first NFR, she, did a little bit of a groundswell fundraising or whatever. And by golly, she truly is sending that money. She sent it to Watermelon's owner, who's trying to do this at home. But it's still expensive, and I think, well, that's a pretty cool gesture, right? To help people who maybe don't have the money to help themselves with their horses. So the financial factor here is a factor. I feel like it's a part of reality too.
Well, I've got a quick question, Doc. I was wondering this. If you're a veterinarian and you have a facility, can you refuse to see a horse that is symptomatic because you don't want it on your, I mean, do you have, I mean, or do most of vets approach it, we're going to treat everything. But I mean, I can see if you, because I read the deal that said the only reason it's in Louisiana is because they trucked all the horses to the big college.
You know, I'm sure you could. I don't think most veterinarians would.
Gotcha.
I think most of them would see it. They take all biosecurity measures and, you know, and in account. They'd probably, you know, work on it outside, obviously out of their clinic, figure out what it is first. And that's the way they do it. And they'd have an isolation stall where they could have it and take care of it. So I don't think you'd see that very often. I do know that in some of these, there were so many cases I heard that even a lot of the clinics were full, their isolation stalls were full. At some even ended up at LSU and other area veterinary schools. They all got full too. There were so many cases that were happening at once and weren't enough facilities to take care of them. You know, and I, you know, hit on biosecurity and, you know, and one of the things that's really important, and I think that the NFR and the PRC have done a very good job on these horses because Texas had a hold, you know, on these horses, a 21-day quarantine, I believe, starting, you know, November 9th. So that made it, that it was just right that these horses could get here on December 1st or 2nd. And so when they come, the horses all have to have had a health certificate, a CVI, and that's usually that's a 30-day. They drop that to 7 days. You have to have that done with a statement on there also saying by your veterinarian that these horses have not been in contact, you know, recently with any horses. That
within 21 days.
Correct. Correct to this event. And then once they get here, well, in addition, before they get here, the contestants were doing a daily log twice a day, keeping the temperatures. And they were, the contestants were home and supposed to be doing this, the time period this all started. So say 2 weeks before they get here, they're checking the temps twice a day and keeping a log, and that was to be checked when they got here. So once the horses arrived at Thomas and Mack, and they would do a wellness check. And first of all, let me say that the veterinarians out there, Dr. Leslie Scher and her crew, are doing an outstanding job. It is a tough situation. And she's got two or three veterinarians with her. She's also got three or four veterinary students that are helping do all this and checking these animals. So as they arrive, they check the health certificate, make sure it's up to date and what they need. They also check the temp on the horse. They all do a wellness exam where they kind of look over the horse. And then the horse is allowed to enter the grounds. Once it's on the ground, all these other biosecurity measures are in place where they have essentially, they have limit human traffic in the barns. In other words, you're not going to take your whole family down the aisle, you know, and they'll limit that. They'll have foot baths. So when you leave the area or you enter the area, you step in a foot bath of disinfectant. They will have, you know, if your water buckets, you need to keep really, really scrubbed clean. If you're going to use a hose to fill that water bucket, you dip that hose, the end of the hose. Try not to touch the hose to the bucket to start.
This is all things they're doing there.
Doing it, Thomas and Mac now. Okay. And the hose then gets dipped in a bucket to disinfect it. They stall shavings. They come out. They go into a certain area that they get in, put into a special dumpster. Once that's full, it's hauled out. The trailers, once they come on the grounds, they're taken to another area where the shavings and the manure are taken out, put in the same dumpster. They hosed out.
It might be the first time some of those trailers have been cleaned out. Go ahead.
I didn't say that. That sounds like some of the people at our ranch. But anyway, so these trailers are sprayed, disinfected, and obviously cleaned, and they're parked in a certain area. And then that's so hopefully when they go home, they're disinfected. And then out there, I see that they have, you know, the rig spraying everything down with disinfectant, the fences, the everything around, you know. So the biosecurity is great. Alan Reinheim has done a great job organizing all of that with Leslie Scherr. And I think that they're doing everything that's possible as far as biosecurity measures go.
I think one thing that's that is interesting for people to know is that this is the first time that I've ever known of where contestants were not allowed to take, once your horse is at the Thomas & Mack, your horse cannot leave the Thomas & Mack for the duration, right? Because in years past, a lot of people, a number of people, quite a few, made accommodations to keep their horses off campus, right? And so this year, that is not allowed, correct?
I believe that's correct, that all horses are staying on the facility at Thomas & Mack. And I think that's good because when a horse leaves, even though they go to somebody's house or farm right around here to stay, and then you don't know what they're exposing to, you're taking maybe something to that place. So it's a good idea. These are all going to be contained there.
Well, we've talked about what the virus is. You've touched on symptoms, right? So let's get on to the really big thing, which you're touching on now, but let's talk about transmission. Let's try to clear up some of the stuff on transmission. Because if you remember in our COVID days, right? I mean, this is a virus, and it reminds me a lot of how the culture reacted to COVID. There's a lot they don't know. I mean, if you think about what you just said, that means every year here, it's 85% of the horses probably had the dynamite in their system. It just hadn't been lit. I mean,
that is, you know, and that's what's so interesting about this. And I think some of the big things that people really need to do is vaccinate. You vaccinate for the virus. And it is not something that is real protective for the EH, the myelencephalitis part, the neurologic form. But it is very good for the respiratory. So obviously the respiratory form is what morphs into
That's the first. So if you get it, if you don't have it, you don't get the other.
Probably, yeah. But the symptoms, you know, you check the temp. The temp may spike anywhere from, that's why you check the temps. The temp may spike in 24 hours to 6 days, and you don't know when. That's why they like to check it two or three times a day. And if you're starting to show a temp, that's when you need to contact your veterinarian on this deal, especially with this outbreak. Because they need to be able to test it.
So help clarify transmission, because I want to get into this sloughing thing and all this other stuff.
Well, as I said earlier, this virus is in probably 80% of the horses. It's a latent virus, and stress may bring it out. If a horse starts coughing, it's an aerosol, and could be in the mucus if they've got a snotty nose. That may end up on a water bucket, and it's in the air. There's talk that this virus, you know, might be in the air because of within 30 feet. If you're within 30 feet, it's not going to probably travel miles. But if it's in the air and you're in a barn, that's sort of a closed-in barn and a horse is coughing, probably could go 30 feet or more.
30 feet.
Well, we're hearing so many stories like from Waco at the women's finals where, you know, so many people are coming forward now and saying, I was out at my trailer. I came in. I was in the warm-up arena, you know, area for literally a minute and a half. I made my run and I went back to my trailer or whatever. And my horse is positive or whatever. But what I remember about our human COVID was being told things. It too was aerosol in part of
social distancing.
But I remember being told. I think it was Tandy Freeman of all people. You know. You might go to the grocery store and somebody coughs or sneezes in that aisle. And then you come around the aisle and you're stepping right into all the particles that are still in the air. I mean, is that something similar?
I think it's possible. And I think we really don't know all those answers. And I think that's part of the issue. But it is obviously nose to nose contact will definitely do it. You know, if you've got stalls without dividers in between them that are solid, you know, that's not good because they're going to touch noses. But if one horse is coughing in one stall, it'll definitely go.
How long can the virus, if a horse rubs his infected nose on a panel and it's a nice, dry, deserty air, how long can that virus be alive on that I know you can't give me exact, but is it like an hour or a week?
I think it can be up to 28 days.
Holy moly.
But that also really depends on the environment. And because I think most people talk, 14 days, but that's really difficult because I think it all has to do with the environment. And that brings up a whole nother good question. Once these stalls, are used, or even at home, if you've got a horse at home, you need to really clean these stalls well. And that means, if there's spraying them down, scrubbing them with disinfectant, you can use a bleach solution, a 1 in 10, one part bleach to 10 parts water solution, Nalvasan disinfectant on these stalls and scrubbing them really well. I think that's really, really important. Cleanliness is obviously, between people, you want to wash your hands. After you're done with your horse, wash your hands. Don't go touch another one. Don't share halters. Even lead ropes, don't share them. Any of your tack, keep it separate.
Would this be the greatest time ever to put a horse out in a pasture? Just let him be a horse? If people have that luxury?
Sure.
Well, so
pasture is a good place.
This was a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it. If you double masked a horse, would it slow it down?
I think you probably could.
We were all told to mask up. That's a valid. What are you two chuckling for? I'm thinking you mask them. If you double mask them,
disease is the panic and fear that you're trying to bring in COVID into this, and that's all right. I understand.
I'm not. I'm asking a question.
It is something that we need to be very, very careful with. Obviously, it's a serious disease. If they become recumbent, these horses with the neurologic form, it is not something that you want. And as is quite obviously, some of them don't make it through the form of neurologic form.
Is it possible for a horse that is neurologic to make a complete comeback? Is that possible?
Yes.
Okay, that's
great news.
Yes.
That's great news. All probably just like anything, timing, how soon they're treated, how they're treated.
I think it's obviously, Kendra, on that. It really makes a difference when you catch it.
Right. I feel like the comparison when we talk about COVID and the EHV1, it feels so similar because some people want to panic. And then on the flip side, some people want to say, oh, it's just a crock. It's a hoax. It's just complete joke. And to those, though, I say, I think we've all, most of us have experienced COVID, but it's not a joke if you're Leo Camarillo or Denton Payne and you died.
That's correct.
So you don't know if you're the one, right? Is that not similar with a horse? Like,
there was one horse that probably at Waco.
Now we're going to need you to keep that mic where your face is because we couldn't hear you.
Oh, all right. Well, there was one horse probably at Waco that started this. I mean, one horse probably came in shedding the virus, and as he was shedding it, he spread it to some others, and before you know it, we had the problem.
But they can shed with zero symptoms.
Yes.
Correct. So
you can have correct.
So my question is, you go through all these protocols, but I guess if they weren't exposed 21 days, that's where the 21 days comes, because the theory is they weren't exposed, so they should not be shedding.
Correct.
But I mean, to my point on COVID isn't to create panic.
No.
My point on it is this, because nobody has really, this hasn't been headline news, it's been around forever, now it's headline news and there's a lot of misinformation, right? And I'm just wondering, what's the truth?
But it's headline news because the exposure happened in an epicenter of rodeo, right?
Well, and right in front of this. I mean, if it happened,
the timing.
If it happened in May, yes, it would have been bad. But oh my. I mean, how many people did the math? You did. As soon as you read 21, you started going, uh-oh, get my calendar out.
Kendra brought up a really good point a minute ago, but people need to take it serious. This is not something to just say, oh, it's nothing. It is really something. And you need to take care and pay attention to what it is. Take care of your horse. Check the temp regularly if you can, especially if you've been exposed. You know, and if you're home and you've been exposed, keep your horse at home for anywhere from 21 to 28 days and make sure they're not coming down with it. Don't let anybody else on your farm, and for sure don't let any other horses near that horse. If you're going home, separate that horse if you were wherever you've been exposed. That's what's really important. And take it serious.
And the communication part of all of this, like, I feel like it's taken a lot of courage, especially in our culture, for, I don't know that I've seen a male do this, but I've seen some women, you know, to come forward. It takes a lot of courage to say, I saw that a young barrel racer who, I believe she was in Waco, she lives in Colorado, but she came forth publicly and said, I didn't know my horse, you know, I didn't know anything about this when I went to two jackpots in Cheyenne and Wheatland, Wyoming, but I want you all to know that my horse tested positive. I've just unknowingly went to these others, and I just want you to know I was there. That takes a lot of guts, really.
Well, it does, and that's the right thing to do. But the truth is, there's bad apples in every cart, and the fear is that there are those that either don't respect the virus like it should or are skirting the outbound.
The honor system.
Yes. And that's just, you got to say it, right? And so that begs the question, if you have one of the greatest horses ever, do you come to Clark County with that horse this year?
I know that these cowgirls, especially, I haven't talked to a single, my son Lane and I have been writing Horse of the Year stories for the AQHA that are going to roll out this week. So we've talked to a lot of, you know, high-end horse centers, and I haven't talked to one single cowboy who batted an eye about bringing his best one.
I think that's a really good question, and it's all personal.
Yeah.
You know, it's all personal, but I can assure you that what they're doing at Alan Reinheim and the general manager at the NFR, and that Leslie Scher and her team are doing everything they can out there to make sure we have no problems.
Well, now, I saw cases of, like, let me reemphasize what he's saying, because we've been out at the Thomas and Mack. The amount of money, time, and energy that has been putting into making this a hygiene environment at the NFR. And correct me if I'm wrong, this is the greatest gathering of horses in the world annually right here. Is that
yeah, true, and right? I do want to, like, to finish the point about that. So far I haven't run into any cowboys. They seem a little less concerned. I mean, there's a reason that most of them had no exposure to anything coming out of Waco. Every once in a blue moon, somebody with a daughter, yes, whatever, but that's all been dealt with. But these women with these high-end barrel horses, they're working like around the clock since all this started with their veterinarian, who they trust with their life and their horse's life. And so they're not taking any of this lightly. It's not to say that the men don't care about their horses at all. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it is fair. I mean, I've said it now. I said it to you guys on the drive over here. Like, okay, if you have sister, she's one of the goats and she's a mare. And if you have a 5-year-old stud, adios pantalones, you know, there's no telling what his future earnings, you know, are. But these women, these horses are family. And so they didn't take lightly the decision.
It's a personal decision. I'm just saying, wow, right? Like,
and we can also say, I mean, I've heard for a couple of weeks now that there are a few horses that we might not see here, and I think it's now been it's a public situation. The Hayland Lights horse keeper is not going to be here, which is crushing because that's an indoor building superstar, and Cassie Mowry, reigning world champion, said on the stage at the back number night, she's going to be on the gray will because Jarvis is not here. And that, I mean, that's a crusher to all of us, but mostly, you know, Cassie.
One of the real interesting things about this is it's that right now it's a very fluid situation. In other words, it's changing as we're talking. We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know if it's going to be, if what we're talking about today, tomorrow will be completely different. We're hoping not, because it seems like it's sort of stable and quiet right at the moment, which is really good. And but for the next 30 days, we need to pay attention.
Well, and I've heard some criticisms. There's a lot of horse events in and around Las Vegas. And I've heard everything from why. But if they're containing, if the World Series is containing their premises, so is the NFR, right? And we're saying 30, 40 feet, right? This doesn't travel 10 miles. Then technically speaking, these other events probably shouldn't cause any of these horses to be more at risk or not.
Well, also, similar line of thinking, there's a method for the people who are going bonkers online. There's a method to the madness of the timing of the breakaway finals and the bucking horse sale, right? I mean, and for that, I know how people feel about the breakaway ropers in the Thomas and Mack, and I understand all that. And I know some people are griping because they're like, you're going to ruin Christmas by moving it to December 22nd and 23rd at Cowtown, whatever. My personal feeling when I was that, thank you, WPRA, for finding a way to postpone and reschedule instead of cancel.
Costing them a lot of money.
Bottom line.
Yeah.
But the timing of over at the South Point to not have those events ahead of the World Series was very intentional, based on counting the days, like we've been talking about, right? With quarantine days, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Now, real quick, I agree. Herd animals. So we're talking about all these timed event animals, but we've got just as many animals that aren't singled out, that they don't dip the water hoses. I mean, in fairness, right? That they're not, I mean, are the rough stock horses? Because if that ever got into a herd, then it's much more disastrous.
Well, the rough stock is in the same area at Thomas and Mack. So they're all getting the biosecurity measures.
They are. So the rough stock stuff runs through the foot baths and all that stuff. Okay, good.
And they're all getting sprayed down the panels, and so they're doing as I said, the best we can. And we keep talking about 30 feet. It could be 40 feet. I don't think anybody knows. They say 30, but you walk a horse down an aisle out of a barn, what is it? 5 feet to each side.
But that's the same thing. If you've got a 10 mile an hour wind and a horse sneezes, it's going to carry that sputum. Hey, look at there.
Probably
further.
Yeah.
Right.
And it may, by then it's probably going to die out by the time it goes very far. But at the same time, it's a very contagious virus. And this strain, for some reason, people seem to think it's a hotter strain, a more virulent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talking to one of our NFR pickup man, Tyler Kraft, the other day, who runs the ranch at Calgary, is in charge of all these high-end bucking horses and stuff. And I don't know where they landed on this, but he was chuckling the other day. I was talking to him about his horse of the year baby, pickup horse of the year. But I'm like, so how are they going to handle this with the bucking horses? And he said, I heard something about doing nasal swabs. And he said, I'm going to get a front row seat because this ought to be good. I don't know if they will actually attempt that or not. Some of these horses aren't.
Well, if you think about the testing, this is kind of an interesting topic, and we're running out of time. But if you think about the testing, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not 100%. And if you really start to think about the testing, when you test them, how you test them, how effective would that be in eliminating an actual case, right? Fair.
That's similar to COVID in a way too, because isn't it basically, like, to me, my feeling when all that was going around with all of us was like, if you're sick, stay
home.
Isn't that something similar here?
Well, that'd be great if they do that, but as well as I do, that may not always happen. There's a lot up for grabs here, and the testing is good. I mean, there's a PCR test, which is very accurate, but you can also get some false positives. So in other words, you'll have somebody will be a positive. So if it came back positive, they'll probably isolate the horse and then they'll retest it. And they'll see if it came back again positive.
Yeah, but that opens up a whole can of worms. That's the same thing as when they test the barrel horses for juice. You know, you test them, you get a positive. You don't let them play. It was actually a negative. Next comes a lawsuit. So, you know, what we should stress here is that nobody on the promotion and event side in this town is taking this lightly. And neither are the competitors, as far as we know.
The big thing to me is if you've got a question, check your temp. Start checking it twice a day or three times.
Not your temp, your horse's temp.
Excuse me. Yes, your horse's temp. You might want to check yours too. But anyway, you're checking that.
Reach toward his bum with his hand.
So I said I was going to, you know, you need to disinfect the probe before you go ahead.
Yeah, and then once you do that, if you're starting to feel like you're having problems, contact your veterinarian right away and get him or her definitely involved in this because, as I say, it's not something to take lightly.
You know what I think really quick, because we talked about it ahead of time, and it's vital to the big picture of rodeo on the veterinary front. We need more young veterinarians with a passion like you for rodeo. We need more people coming behind you who love it like we do, right?
Yes, and that's thank you for bringing that up, Kendra. That's a big issue, is getting veterinarians involved in rodeo and large animal veterinarians and equine veterinarians. And to stay in, that's been one of the shortages in veterinary medicine, is getting these equine and large animal veterinarians. And actually, we've formed a group, a rodeo veterinary advisory group. And the group is essentially myself and Ben Espy from San Antonio and Dr. Leslie Scher from here and Dr. Greg Vanaclausen, who's in Texas. And
crazy doc.
He is the authority on breeding in animals, cloning and embryo transfer. And anyway, and the authority on bucking horses. But anyway, it's really important. And we've got some backing from Zoetis, who wants to really try to help stimulate these young veterinarians. And that's why last year we had two interns here with Leslie Scher. This year we've got at least three. I don't know if it went up to four yesterday or not. But anyway, we're trying to get them in very, very involved and working with committees maybe to bring in some of these young students to their rodeos and try to get them with a rodeo veterinarian. Mm-hmm. Really important.
All right, Kendra, final thought?
I just think everything, you know, the EHV1 outbreak is one thing, but in general, I just think it's really important as a rodeo community that we all animal welfare issues, that we all get behind it, that we all do what we can to support and help and inform people of the truth, because it impacts our entire sport. And it's not just, well, if they would just go away in California, it'd be fine. Because if the dominoes will fall all across this country, if we let the crack in the door widen one half of a speck of an inch. So we need to stand together.
We do need to stand together, and we need to support each other. And one of the precautions, which I think is just staggering, that I think is public knowledge, is that there will not be an NFR grand entry on horseback. Well, that's what I'm hearing.
I did.
Now, is it stick horses? Because if it's dudes just running with flags, there's going to be a handful that are, this is going to be interesting watching.
I did see yesterday that the flag girls are in full force.
Flag girls are, but I heard.
I heard too.
That they're not. So we'll all be tuned in to see what comes out the gates when they go, where we go here? It's time for a herda.
Just everybody remember that it's throwback night. It's kind of a retro deal. So let's have fun with wearing old things.
Throwback. Ladies, get your Rockies, get your Aquanet. Dudes, hike your Wranglers right up to below your anything. Well, pull them up tight. And it's throwback night. And we want to thank all of you for being a part. Thank you, Dr. Duck, being a part of our show. Thank you, Kendra. Thank you all. I hope you enjoy the 2025 NFR. We want to encourage you. You've got until the first horse bucks, that first bareback horse, to get your Pro Fantasy Rodeo team. After that, you can play daily. From Kendra, myself, No Spin Rodeo, the doc, be clean, do it right. Thank you for being here today. God bless all of you. We'll see you tomorrow at 9:30. Come to the Cowboy Commons, Cinch Stage. Tommy Joe Lucia, Kendra Santos. We'll see you tomorrow.